and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design.
Well, it's great to be here, Ron. All of a sudden, the news got interrupted, and here we are.
Starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Hey, it's good to hear. Sorry to interrupt you. I just thought I'd continue the interruptions. Why not, right? Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you. Is there something else you wanted to say about the Pillsbury Doughboy?
No, well, maybe later in the program if that comes up.
Okay. We're talking serious topics
this
here.
Conversation so meaningful. And before we do that, though, Heidi Thompson joins us, which you've probably heard
Heidi
as well
Thompson
already.
And is Heidi due for some congratulations?
She is.
Oh, yeah. I passed my test, so I was very excited.
The test, what was it again, the designation officially?
It's the RICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional. So letters after my name now.
Nice.
Very exciting.
Very nice.
And some of the best, brightest individuals in the industry, period, teaching that material. Not all exciting teachers, as you communicated with
some
us.
Some more exciting than others, let's just say.
Now, in a couple weeks, three weeks, we're going to be at another studio within the group here.
The Midwestern Broadcasting Empire.
Yes.
Yes.
Because this particular studio is being trashed.
Torn apart.
Removed. Out.
Improved.
There you go.
Improved. Yes. Taken apart and refurbished. What fun.
I'm told they're adding a dash of color.
Ooh.
Excellent. Yes, we've been listening to the pundit here, the pontification, if you will, and that's all seemed to be related to that. Today we are talking about successor beneficiaries. And that was a question that actually came up from a caller. You know, what about when my children inherit this thing? Are they going to have to, my children's children, what's that look like in terms of how quickly they have to remove the funds from these retirement accounts? And it does mean something, of course, as these accounts continue to grow. How much do they have to take? What's their time to take it, if you will? So successor beneficiaries, we're going to be talking about that first, and then Roth IRA distributions. What is the ordering rules for that? When do I avoid the penalties for taking money out in case I might want to? What if I need to take some money? Heidi's also going to be covering Social Security and Medicare, some new rules and regs and information.
Some tips.
There you go. And then we'll also have the Shea stats toward the end of the show. So, first off, the successor beneficiary. Now, what beneficiary is the successor beneficiary? This is the beneficiary that your child typically names. Who follows after them? And how quickly do they have to take those funds?
So you say if you pass away, your beneficiary is your child.
Yes.
At that point, your child has to name a successor beneficiary?
Has to name in that case, it'd be a primary.
Well, yeah.
But to you, that would be successor.
So it's really a beneficiary of a beneficiary. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Now, you can't specifically name that in most situations, but certainly your child can. So if your child inherits that account anytime after 1-1 of 20, which is when January 1st of 2020 is when the Secure Act came into being. And after that date, before that date, if your child had inherited, they would be able to, if they wanted to, take it out over their own life expectancy, which could be 50 years, starting 50 years. And theoretically, their own child could continue on. But if they inherited, if they inherit after that 1/1/20 date, they have to take it out over a 10-year period. So that really scrunches that down in terms of, instead of 1/50th or about 2%, in essence, it's about 10%. Now, you don't have to take 10% per year, but you do have to empty the account, given that you're a non-spouse beneficiary, generally a child. You have to get that emptied, that account emptied, after the end of the 10th year.
And the danger there is this acceleration of having to take this money that's in a tax-deferred account out of that account and pay those income taxes. So this is where you want to really strategize. How are you going to get this money out and pay the least amount of taxes? And so that's what sort of makes us emphasize this a lot, because it takes planning to try to keep as much as you can.
Yes. Very good point. So that's important to know. How are they going to inherit? And is there any available stretch for them? It's 10 years. So in thinking about this, especially as these accounts continue to grow, what sorts of planning do you want to do to help them manage this? You may decide that you want them in earlier in meetings with your financial advisor. How do I inherit this? What are going to be the tax consequences? Who are you? You know, when they're looking at me as the financial advisor, that is extremely helpful. The more you can make this non-stratified, if you will, in terms of relationship and communication, the better it is. So introducing your child or children, especially the ones who are going to be the decision makers in regards as whether they're trustees or they're simply helping oversee the estate. They're executors or executrix. I think that's the other term.
I don't know. Tricks. They're full of tricks. I don't know.
Yes, well, T-R-A-X.
Popped into my head.
It's a Cyril, you know, that we all
We'll love. Ask the professor.
Yes. So given that's the case, how did they take advantage of this, and what do they need to know? That's why we go through these modules from Ed Slott, to help them understand, okay, so this is how I inherit it, and I'm supposed to transfer it directly. All those kinds of conversations can be brought up close and personal so they can see who we are. Well, Dennis, am I going to die tomorrow? Hopefully not, right? Yeah, we get it. But given the complexity of these accounts, and often these are not directed through a trust anymore, a trust in most cases in retirement account land really doesn't make nearly as much sense as it once did. Given that's the case, you want to make certain that they at least have an idea of what's going on, who the people involved are, so that they can form that relationship and get what that's going to look like in the future too. Because the beneficiaries may not get it. You've had years, decades to learn this stuff. Who's going to follow? And how can you bring this a bit closer to them again, so that they can be helped in this process? It's big.
So when you're the beneficiary and you take that money out, you pay tax on it right away. You can't.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unless it's a Roth.
Okay. Right.
So if it's a Roth IRA, they inherit that tax-free. And theoretically, you know, they could leave it in for the full 10 years.
Okay.
And you may want to in a Roth situation.
You can let that pile up for 10 years and then take it all out
tax-free. Take it out as a lump sum tax-free fully. So you've already paid the tax back, you know, 20 years ago, let's say, when tax rates were much lower than the 50% they are now.
Yeah.
You know, given that they are 50% at that point, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Tax rates, tax brackets should come up. So should you take advantage, that's another question, of those possible lower tax brackets now? In many cases, yes. In many cases, yes. So there you have it.
There you have it.
The successor beneficiary and how quickly they have to empty those accounts. The Secure Act defines this and how it's done, and that's all changed as of 1/1 of 2020.
And the motivation behind that, you think, was Congress was just to get more money flowing, i.e. more taxes flowing to the
government? Oh, yeah. It was a
government?
Huge tax increase.
Okay. Accelerate that money coming out of the IRAs so that then they can tax it as income.
Yeah. That had been in their craw a long time.
Because they don't have enough money in Washington.
Well, apparently not. apparently they don't. They can't. They don't care for Hop on Pop either anymore. And I'm just. I don't know. Things are changing so dramatically. I don't know what to say or do about that. All right. Here's a great example that we should cover in regards to this. Example one, in regards to the SECURE Act and what it does to a specific beneficiary in terms of payout. I'm going to read this. It's a couple of paragraphs, not too long. Prior to the SECURE Act, Archie inherited an IRA from his father. At that time, Archie used his own single life expectancy to stretch the RMD payments, which could have been 40 years at that point, okay? Archie then named three equal successor beneficiaries on the inherited IRA, his spouse, his disabled brother, and his minor daughter. So he had three. Since it was pre-Secure Act, Archie knew that these successor beneficiaries could all step into his shoes and continue the stretch IRMD payments based on his remaining single life expectancy should he pass away. So if he'd started at 40 years, let's say he passed away. Archie was tragically killed in an automobile accident in 2020. It doesn't say when he inherited it, but just say it was 5 years later. So 40 was now 35 years. They could have stepped in essence, taking about 3% or so of the balance, 1/35, if you will. Because they step into his shoes on that life expectancy table, 35 years. So they can take, in essence, 1/35, which is about 3% or so.
And under that example, they have to clear it out in 35 years?
They do, yes.
This was the old rules.
Yeah. But now they've changed. Right. So it gets deeper, more exciting, Ron.
This is the exciting second paragraph.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Archie was tragically killed, in an automobile accident in 2020 after the effective date of the SECURE Act.
Uh-huh.
As such, all three of his beneficiaries are now saddled with a 10-year payout. The fact that they are eligible designated beneficiaries is irrelevant when they are successor beneficiaries. So they are all eligible EDBs, as referred to, because they are younger than the age of 18 or disabled or whatever.
Even the minor daughter has 10 years to take the money out.
Well, the minor daughter has to take it out in 10 years as well.
Wow.
So a big tax change possibly for them and or responsibility change too, in terms of inheriting these kinds of accounts. So beware.
What can people do? It's different situations, but if you're in the situation where you didn't want to take the money out, you didn't want that, and you have to now take it out in 10 years.
Well, you know what penalty is, Ron? If you don't take it out, it's 50%.
50%?
It hits you hard.
Hopefully they don't tell you. So let's just say it's a big account, even $100,000. Obviously, we get 50% of that is $50,000.
Plus, you probably pay taxes on the other 50 grand that you keep.
Right.
So people are there good advisors out there? Is this maybe a new part of, your profession, advising these people now and say, you've got 10 years to burn through this. Here are some good ideas.
The tax planning gets even more important as it relates to this. And that was a question yesterday that we had from a client. Okay, let's say I need, we're doing some retirement planning, financial planning. If we need $50,000 for a new vehicle, where's that money going to come from? Well, it's going to depend. Usually there are three main sources: cash, other accounts that are non-retirement, Roth and regular IRAs. Hmm. How do you manage that? You take a look at your tax situation at that point. In today's situation, it may make more sense to pay some more tax, given how low the rates are.
Hmm.
So it can tend to be a moving puzzle, moving something.
Moving target.
It's almost like
target.
They changed the rules on you and you have to pivot.
They did, indeed. And that's important. So that's, I think, a helpful illustration of the successor beneficiary. After this, we're going to move on to the Roth IRA ordering rules, but we want to hit Social Security and Medicare first. Heidi, you got some helpful tips.
I do. I ran across this last week, and it was something that I wasn't aware of, so I thought I might bring it to the show to tell everybody about it. It's regarding Medicare. Now, a lot of times when you come in to see us in our office, we will go over a list of things that you should have. You should have a will, a financial power of attorney, a durable health care power of attorney, and a living will. But there's something else we can add to that list, and it's called the authorization to disclose personal health information. And this is something that your Medicare, if you have traditional Medicare, you would fill out this form, and it would give permission to whoever you designate to deal on your behalf with the insurance side. It's not the healthcare decisions. It's paying the bills, what's going to be covered, those sort of things. So if you're going to have a procedure done and you might be out of it, maybe you're, you know, on medication, or you just won't have the energy to address this, you can fill out this form and someone on your behalf can deal with Medicare. Now, if you have an Advantage plan, then you would want to check with your Advantage plan provider, because they will have not the same form, but a similar form for them. So this can be found out there on the Medicare site, and you can print out the form and you can have it authorized, and you can have it just in case you need that additional assistance, just another thing that can maybe make things easier in a difficult time.
So. Well, given that they're the ones in many cases who are going to be writing the check for your health care, that could be extremely helpful.
Right.
And now, what is the name of that form again, Heidi?
The name of the form is the Authorization to Disclose Personal Health Information.
Okay. Catchy.
Yep. Very inventive.
All right. Good luck trying to remember that one. So, you printed off actually a copy of that.
It is. It's about 3 or 4 pages long. It's just got check boxes and fill in the blank, and then you mail that in. And
so should anyone do this who's age 65 in case they're concerned that they might they may not be able to handle all those details, whether a spouse or responsible child, then, do you think?
I think it would be a great thing to have on hand. I know, you know, if you're dealing with different insurance companies, you know, you need to get the information now. It impacts your decision making, and to just smooth things through and save some aggravation for yourself and your family by filling out this form, you could take that away. So
it's a big one. Really is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. So I had never heard of that form, so
neither had I.
I don't know if a lot of people know about it. So my second tip today comes from the Social Security Administration. And the Social Security Administration is starting to put out some fact sheets. And these sheets are going to be available on your portal. If you have signed up to have a portal with the Social Security Administration, that's where you get your statement and it shows you what your benefit might be. So they've divided it by age and what fact sheet will be available to you. So in the first group, we're going to have people who are 18 to 48, and that is going to talk to people about saving for retirement and employer plans and IRAs, and it's going to give some facts about that. And then we have the 48 to 60, where they're going to talk about catch-up contributions that are available to people who are over the age of 50, and that goes for IRAs as well as employer plans, mm-hmm. including simple plans, where they're
403b accounts, retirement accounts, 401ks. Most of them allow 457 plans. Most of them allow catch-up contributions, which means you can put more in than the average bear. Thank you.
Yep. So then the next fact sheet is going to be from people from 68 to 69, and they're going to talk about what the difference is with claiming age. So if you claim early or at full retirement age or at age 70, and it's going to have some facts on there about what the implications of those choices are. And then the final group is for people over 70. And the message is going to be, now is the time to claim what you have earned, because it's not going to grow anymore from that point on. So you want to claim at 70. There's no bonus points for waiting any longer. So,
yeah, that surprised me, because we were talking about this beforehand. I thought that they just automatically required that, but apparently you still have to sign up for benefits, even if you're 70, and you do not want to wait after age 70. That is the maximum age at which you'll get your increased benefits. So they do not grow beyond that age, and that's critical for you to do, obviously, for a lot of reasons. Now, in terms of drawing at 62 versus 70, there's almost a doubling of the amount, given that it's about 8% per year an increase. That's the flat increase. That assumes no increases internally to Social Security, given its cost of living increase. So it could, I wouldn't say it'd be easily double, but it certainly can, especially if you're working and still getting credits and some of those previous 35 years are dropping off. Social Security is based on your best 35 years of earnings.
Your best, not your last.
Not your last, but your best.
Yes. And another thing to keep in mind, because I get this, I've gotten this a couple of times in the last couple weeks with some clients, is when you're looking at your benefit statement and it says you're going to get X at full retirement age, they're assuming that you are going to continue work at your current level. So if you're in your late 50s, and you're thinking, I'm going to get this, I'm going to retire now, the numbers are not going to be quite the same. There's a lot of assumptions that they're making about your behavior in the future. So you always want to look at those numbers, but then take a step back and go, okay, you know, what are the range that it might be in? It's, you don't want to take that exact number and count on it if you're not going to fulfill their assumptions.
Right. And are you collecting your own benefit or the benefit of a spouse?
Exactly.
Or a former spouse?
Yeah.
That could be the case as well. Next are the Shea stats, and after that we'll talk about the 5-year rules for Roth accounts. Shea stats, please, Ron.
Good morning. Welcome to March. Are you ready for some Shea stats? The split between up stocks and down stocks in the S&P 500 based upon year-to-date performance through last Friday, February 26 of 21, is 59% up and 41% down. The source for that is the S&P 500. The yield on a 10-year Treasury note closed at 1.46% on Friday, February 26 of 21. The all-time record low close for the 10-year note was 0.5% set on March 9th of 2020. The 10-year notes have been traded in the USA since 1790, or 231 years of trading, and that's from the Treasury Department. The average single-family home in the USA has appreciated 39% over the last 5 years, ending December 31st of 2020. Homes in Idaho are up 82.5% and have experienced the greatest growth in value, while homes in North Dakota, 14.1%, have seen the least percentage in increase in value, and that's from the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Mortgage debt is at $10.04 trillion. Student loan debt is $1.56 trillion. And auto loan debt is $1.37 trillion. They have reached an all-time record high as of December 31st, 2020. And that's from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The government surveys 60,000 households each month in order to estimate our nation's unemployment rate. 60,000 households out of a grand total of 125.8 million houses. That means data collected from one out of every 2,097 households is the source for our jobless rate, and that's from the Department of Labor. There are 278 executives surveyed in August of 2020, and they anticipate that they will reduce their office space footprint by an average of 30% when their current leases come up for renewal. Those surveyed report a successful work-from-home experience during the pandemic and has decreased their need for daily office space. That's from the McKinsey Global Institute. The government payment to a hospital caring for Medicare-eligible patient who has been diagnosed with COVID-19 has been increased to 20% over traditional inpatient reimbursement through Medicare. This additional payment will be in effect until the end of the public health emergency caused by the pandemic. This is from the Centers for Medical and Medicaid Services. Well, those are my Shea stats for the day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Shea Pataja, Chief Experience Officer at Prout Financial Design.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
I'm going to go buy a house in Idaho. Maybe it's too late. I
was going to say, you know, that, what was I thinking? I was thinking to buy one in North Dakota, but just forget the whole thing. I mean, really.
Yeah.
All right. Navigating the 5-year rules for Roth accounts. In 1998, Bill Clinton was president. Google was founded. ER was the most popular show on TV, and Roth IRAs were enacted that year. By the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997, the Roth IRA. More than 20 years later, much has changed, but some things have stayed the same. As Ed Slott says, we are still receiving the same questions about the 5-year rules for Roth IRA distributions that we were getting back then. These questions have now become less theoretical and more urgent as decades have passed and they go on. It's interesting. It does get more important. Should we take the funds from this? What are my holding periods? What if I decide to roll my 401k Roth account to a regular Roth IRA? Are there any requirements for that? As it turns out, the clock starts again on the earnings. 5 years if you don't have a previous Roth IRA. That shows the importance of at least starting a small Roth IRA. A small Roth IRA.
So it's a great idea for people who are out there. If you don't have a Roth IRA and you can make a Roth contribution, just to start one up with a minimal amount can help down the line, because once you start that clock, that 5-year clock, then, you know, after 5 years, it frees up a lot of the tangled web of these rules. So
You're like you're a soothsayer almost, Heidi. You saw exactly where it was going. So the 5-year forever clock is what it's called.
Yeah.
The Roth IRA distribution rules are favorable to taxpayers. All of an individual's Roth IRAs are aggregated or put together to determine the tax consequences of a distribution from any one of them. Any one of them. I love this illustration here.
Well, Dennis, I'll tell you that I'm big on the Roth IRA, as everybody probably knows who listens. Yeah. But I have both my older girls who have graduated from school. I made them start a Roth IRA right when they graduated. So they get that 5-year clock ticking already.
That's awesome. Mm. Good job. So here's a great example. On March 17th of 2017, Aaron, age 65, contributed $1,000 to a Roth IRA. Almost sounds like one of your daughters there, Heidi. Mm. As a prior year contribution for 2016. So she made, which we can all do, we have until April 15th of this year to make a contribution to a Roth, a non-deductible IRA, or a traditional IRA for the previous year.
That's correct.
Yes. And this was Aaron's first entry into the Roth. Now, in 2018, Aaron converted her $500,000 traditional IRA to another Roth IRA with a different IRA custodian. So, tracking back again, the first contribution occurred in March 17th of 17 for 2016. In 18, then, she converted a $500,000 IRA, traditional IRA, to Roth. Now, the next part of this, on February 12th of 21, when the converted Roth was worth $550,000, Aaron took a total distribution from that account. The question is this. Is it all tax-free? Is it all tax-free? Now, Aaron is age 65, so
yes.
You don't have to worry about penalties. Ron, it's incredible. You've just gotten better with time. You know, what are you going to do? Good job, sir. So, why?
Did they pay the taxes when they converted?
Yes, she did pay the tax.
That was a big tax year for her, $500,000.
I guess so.
It paid the tax. But what's interesting is the distribution is a qualified distribution of earnings because Aaron is already over the age of 59 and a half, which already gave you that clue. And the five-year holding period began when? Even though she didn't open it until
2016.
March. Amazing. Trifecta over there. You score twice. Back to back. Hat tricks. Is that what that is? That could
two.
Be, I guess.
You need three.
Dennis knows zero about hockey. Yes, he just. So it's incredible. Because from 1-1 of 16. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. So that money comes out tax-free. And counted from a pittance, a piddly amount of $1,000. Really not that great. And many of these Roth IRAs, the minimum that you can put into them often is $250 to $500. It doesn't have to be a king's ransom.
Right, and that's exactly what I was saying. You just start one out for $500, get that clock ticking. Yep. So like in this circumstance, she was able to avoid. So.
Here's just an off-the-wall question. Assuming your daughters are, what, early 20s? I mean, they put, let's just say $1,000. If they didn't do anything else, Dennis, let's say in 40 years, roughly 40, 50, how much would that $1,000 be worth, would you say? Can you just guesstimate?
Didn't bring my calculator.
You have your special calculator.
Okay. So let's assume, so 40 years later, is that what you said?
40 years later, $1,000. You're going to do this by 10?
I'm just going to do a rough. So we've got $1,000, and let's assume it's doubling every 7 years. So that's 10%. So every 7 years into 40 is about 6. For 6, it'd be 42. Right, yeah. So let's say it's 42 years for me. So there's 6 times. So the first double is in 6 years at $2,000. Next double, $4,000. Next 8. Next 16. So 7, 14, 21, 28. Jeez, we got a bit longer to go. $32,000 gets us to 36.
Doubles. Okay.
And then $64,000. 64.
From the 1,000, and you're not paying taxes.
Assuming a 10% rate.
Okay. Just every 7 years. That's amazing.
Yeah. And that is entirely possible to assume given the long time frame that we have there. Okay.
We had somebody called and wanted to know, if you start collecting Social Security and continue to work, are you still contributing to Social Security?
Say that again.
If you start to collect your Social Security.
I was just checking my numbers to make sure they were correct.
Checking the
Did
math.
He get that right?
Sorry, let's say you're over 62, you're collecting your Social Security, but you still work. And they want to know, are you still then contributing to Social Security? You would be, wouldn't you? If you're collecting it, but you're also working.
Yes. Yep. And it can increase your benefits,
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. It certainly can.
There we go.
You bet.
But if you're under full retirement age and you're still working, you want to keep in mind the earnings limitation on your Social Security.
Oh, yeah. Between the age of 62 and about 66 or full retirement age, FRA or full retirement age is about 66 and a half right now or so. Okay. All right. So... But one thing that we didn't cover regarding taking these accounts, this rather, I'll just say it, ridiculous illustration of Aaron taking a full $500,000 from that Roth, that means that that money will no longer grow tax-free. Oh. So there's always that part of it.
Ew.
While she can, as the accountant would say, John Sluice, should she?
Should she?
Should she?
That's a whole another question.
It is.
John Sluice, or as we call him, Dr. Sluice.
Well, we can't use that name anymore, Ron, and I think we may want to go some training for that.
You
get the sensitivity training. Really, I mean, you know. All right, thanks,
we have
Ron.
Time, I think, for...
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, sure.
Amity's calling from Maple City. Good morning, Amity.
Hi, guys.
Yes,
morning.
I'm fully retired. I'm 66 years old, but I still referee soccer, and I make money, and I pay taxes on it. Can I contribute what I make in a Roth IRA?
You certainly can, as long as your income limits are within the range. It's got to be less between. Are you married, may I ask?
Yes.
All right, so as long as you and your spouse are below the income limit of about $200,000, you can put money into a Roth IRA. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Amity.
Yeah, for 2020, it's 196 to 206. Okay. For 2021, it's 198,000 to 208.
And that is the limit.
That's
for what?
The limit at which you can still make a Roth IRA contribution. Roth phase out limits.
Is there a limit as to how much you can put in there per year?
Well, because he is over age 50, it's $7,000. So you can really put a pretty good dent in the checking account with those.
Okay.
Between he and his spouse, if she's not working outside of the home, he could, in essence, contribute for both he and his wife, as long as his income was, Heidi?
14.
$14,000. There you are.
There you go.
So it's incredible. And just starting that, then if he doesn't have an IRA, Roth IRA previously, open up a small one again to get that forever clock started. Talk about great strategy, right?
Yes, indeed.
I
will ask here, if people are listening, say you've covered so much ground today, there's so much strategy involved.
Oh,
if we wanted to come and talk
here
to you or Heidi or Dennis,
sure,
you just call and make an appointment, right?
Call Meg or Beth. Yep. Our phone number there, 231-947-3992. And we actually have, if you want it, a Roth ordering rule chart here.
Ah.
The Roth IRA 5-year clocks and distributions ordering rules.
Show Ron how easy it is to figure that out.
That Dennis could put that up over a sofa.
I guess so. Just look at that. Just look at that, dear, and watch her eyes cross. She can't stay awake. I don't know why not. Yes, but anyway, yes, we're happy to meet with those who would like to and talk about these issues related to your finance and what you might do with them to improve, hopefully, your situation. You bet.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.